वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
Remember when I was talking about Houston Smith's introduction to the transcendent unity of religions, and I talked about the triangle, that triangle. Yeah. So there's a little picture up here, picture of the triangle, where down here are the religions, and up here are the mystics of each one of the many different religions there are. So it says, where in the triangle is Vedanta? Why is Vedanta not a religion, or is it? Vedanta is really not considered a religion. It's considered a teaching methodology for a pramana, for those mumukshus who want to gain moksha, and it is part of the Vedic culture. And so even the idea in the Vedic culture, even if the idea of religion is not really there, it's more of a way of life. But if we were to talk about religion, it would be all of the different, many different pujas, many different gods that to be worshipped in different ways, many different types of pujas and rituals to be done, all of the mythologies, you know, all of the basic underlying cultural beliefs, that would all be kind of in the domain of the religion. Whereas when you get to the darshanas, darshanas means the teaching traditions, teaching methodologies, the different philosophical systems, but then that doesn't work either. The darshanas, also, let me just say, the darshanas are things like the yogas, the Sankhya Yoga, the Vaisheshikas, the Nyayayikas, the Mimamsas, and the Vedanta. So there are six basic darshanas. The Sankhya Yoga is two. The Vaisheshika Nyayayika is two, so that's four, and then the Mimamsa and Vedanta are related. And every one of the darshanas has moksha as its goal, except for the Mimamsakas, which are the first portion of the Vedas, and they have Swarga Satyaloka as the highest loka that you can gain, which is there kind of similar to moksha. Mm-hmm. So if we divide this kind of the mystics, and again, these are kind of wavy divisions, but those mystical traditions, as well as the darshanas, want to know God, want union with God, want relationship with God, direct, immediate. Whereas within the religious dogmas and rituals, it's more worship of God, prayer to God, without the focus being on "I want to know you," as "I want to know you," "I want to meet you," "I want to unite with you," "I want to absorb my being into you," but as a direct, immediate relationship. So, all of these different ways of worship, even within Hinduism, there's many ways of worship. But then we can go to the different branches, like different around the world, different types of religions, like I mentioned, major ones like Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, and Hinduism, and there are many, many groups of each, and there's more too. I guess those are just very basic ones that are different. So the ways of worship are very different. But when you get up to the mystical traditions or the darshanas, what they're after, what they want, is very similar. They want and they experience in various ways, through various methodologies. Some will define it as a meeting, a unity becoming united with God, you know, because they experience through their traditions various types of samadhi, basically. And then when they have that samadhi experience, they will talk about it in very similar ways. If you read some of the Christian mystics, like the Cloud of Unknowing and St. John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, as you read them, you see that they're, or Rudolf Otto and Meister Eckhart, all these, as you read them, they're all describing that innermost relationship with the self. You know, in various ways within that mystical tradition, they realize there's some union with God there, some sort. So that they have so much in common, these mystical traditions, even though their beliefs and worship and all of that is very different. You know, that what in their mystical traditions, it has to do with union with God in some way. So, the end. It means I can't have anything else to say. How do you heal a relationship with someone who is no longer in your life? My first thought was, oh, that's easier. I don't know if that's true, then I had second thoughts about it. I'm just telling you what the first thought was. I think just like the inner child work, different meditations we do that have to do, which we haven't been done since we've been here this time, have to do with really like sitting down imaginally with that person and actually saying everything that you went through and with all your feelings, not in anger, but just objectively just saying, this is how in our relationship I felt, you know, this is what happened to me. And you can even have the little one inside say, and this is how I felt, you know. And then you have your partner tell you exactly how they felt and what happened to them and their little one. And then when you start to really deeply understand each other and all of the threads, all the cause-effect threads that came together to produce this separation, that whatever it was that ended in this separation, so that you both understand, even if they're your partners, and they're your partners there internally, you know, even if they're not there externally, they're there internally. And so that the blame goes away, so that it becomes it's no blame. It's, these are the things that came together, and this is what it produced, and this is why we separated. This is what happened. You know? That is what happened, you know. And you can do that whether your partner has left the area, or your partner has passed away, or whatever it is. Still, the psyche, it's a problem in the psyche and in the introjects of the psyche. Because say you were with your partner for so many years or whatever, you know, that introject means the image and relationship. There are all the relationships and everything about your partner that you've ever experienced is there in your unconscious. So your partner is there in your unconscious. Your relationship is there in the unconscious. All the problems are there. And if there was discord when you separated or stepping whatever that's happened, then that's the one that you're going to be working it out with through that type of dialogue and understanding and just kind of objectively seeing all of these various things coming together to produce this separation. And then you offer the whole thing up to Ishwara. Yeah. I mean, one way or the other, all of our relationships will come to an end, because everything comes to an end. So some relationships come to an end sooner than later. Some relationships come to the end because your partner dies. You lose your partner. Not because you want to, but because you do. Sometimes you separate not because you want to, but because it doesn't work. You can't stay together. It doesn't work. It's not healthy. It's its time has passed. And so there's not even any energy left to work on it. There's energy left to work on the relationship, then it's still a sadhana. You know, there's still something holding the two of you together. And you work through the hard times and the misunderstandings and you grow from that. But then sometimes the karma of the relationship is over and there's not much you can do about that. It's not always a mistake when there's a separation. Sometimes it's the karma. There's a beautiful verse. It's actually, it's a verse that's located somewhere. Somewhere in the vast tradition, but this little verse was put in the second book of Bhandarka, which is a text I used to always teach. This text to students who are studying Sanskrit. There's Bhandarka book 1 and book 2. And so in book 2, they're all verses from all over the place of, you know, tradition. And there's this one verse that said, you know, in two logs meet together in the ocean, you know, and they're held together and the waves and the currents of the ocean hold them together for some time, and then as the currents change, the logs separate. And when those currents change, the logs might say, no, no, not now, no, not now, you know, not now. But the currents have changed. So there they go. See what I mean? It's beautiful imagery. Kind of think about how relationships actually are. You come together with somebody, you stay for some time. It could even be lifetimes. You know, you survived the death of each other, and you meet up and do it again because the karma's not finished. So you could be together for a long time, or it could be just a short time meeting. You know, who knows? So I think that these type of inner working and inner dialogues to bring about an acceptance and no blame. It didn't work out because you did this and you did this and you did this. And it's always two. It's always two people involved. So. Because that person would say, yeah, but you did this and this and this. Yeah, but you did this and this and this. And no, you did this and this. That's it. This question, Vishwasaha and Shraddha. Do they mean the same, or what is the difference? The Vishwasa, they had a synonym too. I can't remember the synonym for Vishwasa. So I think it's in your book, if you have your book. Vishwasa means basically trust or confidence or faith. These are synonyms. Trust, confidence, faith, belief in. So you can have Vishwasa, you know, in all kinds of things even, you know, or you trust the person who gave you directions. He seemed like a sane man, you know. You have some Shraddha, you could have Shraddha in him, have faith in him. But normally when we use the word Shraddha, it's used technically, even though you could use it as a synonym. And sometimes I'll say, well, yeah, I have a lot of Shraddha in that person. But really when you're using the word Shraddha, I take the use as a little bit circumscribed to your guru, the Shastra, the tradition that is holding you. You have Shraddha in that. Because it's kind of a sacred word, you know. So you can save Shraddha for that guru-sisha relationship, for your relationship with your for us with the Vedanta, with the Shastra, there's a Shraddha there. And for us it's like a faith or a trust pending understanding. Means there's something inside of you that says yes to be able to put in that time, that very deep commitment that isn't, doesn't last 1 or 2 days. It's a, you live with it for some time, and there's a lot of teaching involved, a lot of understanding involved. And then there's that guru-sishya relationship that is also very, very deep and triggers a lot of stuff inside, naturally, because there's so much love involved in this teaching. You know. So a lot of things will get stirred up and triggered, but there's some deep shraddha, you know, that makes, that allows you to, and that not, doesn't even allow you, because of that shraddha, you stay with it, because you have the shraddha and you're a mumukshu. Yeah, so the mumukshutva and the shraddha, so all go together. But if I say vishwasa, that's the same, in a way, the same idea, but it's applied differently. But just to give you an example of that, in psychology, we use the word transference for a projection. There's not that much difference, because in a projection, say you and your partner, you know, you're both projecting like anything on each other, you know. You're all projecting your inner child, hurts and pains, you're projecting that onto your partner. So then that's just layman's talk. But when we use the word transference, we're talking exactly about projection, except that projection has to do with the client's projection onto the therapist. And then that becomes something that's worked through in that therapeutic relationship. And so even though there's not very much difference in the terms, there is a difference in the situation where those terms are applied. And I feel that way about shraddha. It doesn't have to be, but I think it is kind of like that. And then as we, this goes off, and so does... We haven't had any phone calls interrupting us. Mm-hmm. That's our first little one, little baby one. You mentioned that telling your story over and over again can help past traumas. Is it this also possible to write your story again and again, and how to do this without re-traumatizing yourself? It's true that one of the major curative factors in post-traumatic stress disorder is telling your story over and over and over again to people who love you, to your therapist, the person you're working with, and to those who love you. Not telling your story over and over again to yourself. Because then, unless you have that inner friend inside, you know, or internally you're telling the story to Bhagavan, your Ishtadevata is sitting there, or you're directly saying it to Ishvara, that's different. But to just the mere rote saying it over and over again is not the healing factor. The healing factor is that you're telling it to somebody. Somebody is listening to it, you know. And so people will tell the story over and over to their closest friends and their loved ones. And also in therapy, they'll tell over and over, and they'll remember different things, and there'll be different affects, and that's considered to be one of the ways that we can. The EMDR is another good way, but this is one that we use a lot for this post-traumatic stress. It seems to, and also, you know what? Also, a person wants to tell it over and over. You don't. There's an urge to tell it over and over, you know. And in a small way. A different way than a post-traumatic stress disorder is if you've lost a loved one, you know, there's a lot of grief there, and there's something healing about telling the people who care about you, that are close to you, telling exactly what happened. You know, if you've had that experience, telling everything about what happened, you know. It's curative somehow. It's like the psyche needs to tell it. I was just thinking, because I was This is not big or small. I'm not saying it's big or small, but when Lucky died, and then I called and just let them know because the vets had known him so because of all of his different issues. So, but when he did die, then I had Shweta there, so they were two, and then Shweta was left by himself, and so Shweta needed to go to the vet. And for something I don't remember, I think I was trying to get all the papers together to come here, bring him here if I thought that was the right thing to do. So anyway, we went to the vet, and the doctor that had taken care of Lucky, shyly, and I was also shy, I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't know if they wanted to hear about it, but he asked me what happened. And I had to stop myself from telling him in great detail every last thing that happened in those final days, you know. And I noticed that in telling my friends that it's something very healing about telling it, all of the details, everything. You know, and I noticed when my brother passed away around 20, 25 years ago now, at that time, you know, how we wanted to talk about it. You need to talk about it. You want somebody to know everything. It's how it is. And that's for grief, you know, or that's not a post-traumatic stress, but it is a grief. And if you want that, I've noticed that in various situations. So now imagine if it's a post-traumatic stress, there's wanting to tell. So wanting to talk about it, and sometimes when it's some level of post-traumatic stress, it's also very difficult to talk about because of the trauma. So there's a tug-of-war inside around it. There's part of you that really needs to and wants to really talk about it, and part of it that doesn't want to remember anything. So there's this. And so in the therapy, then we're trying to break through that so that it can be released. Oh, these are blank papers. these are the scratch papers. See, they're scratch papers, so we're all done. Now we can sing. Unless there's some questions from you. Anybody have anything?
We discussed the other day between us about Jiva Srishti.
Yeah. And Ishwar Srishti?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But now in relation to Pratibhasika, the subjective reality, if you could talk a little bit about the connection there between these two terms.
Okay, yeah. Actually,
because it seems like
they're similar, the same problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little different context, but same meaning. When we go into the orders of reality, so we will be getting into this, but let's just do some of it now. It's nice. When we get into these orders of reality, or the different ontologies, you know, there's the Pratibhasika, Paramartika, Satyam, the absolute reality, free from time, of Brahman, of the self. You know? Then there's Mithya, which has to do with everything in this creation. And then there's Tucham, absolute non-existence. So now within Mithya, there are different orders of reality, all of which are mitya. So, just to go through the two basic ones, so we'll do those two. Vyavaharika Satyam is mitya. Vyavaharika Satyam is this empirical, shared reality. It's not your projection, right? Like, for instance, we are all here in this room and we're sharing this reality. We all have a little bit different vision because we're all at different angles, right? And, but nevertheless, we know where this is in the scheme of things. We know where Sicily is. It's a shared empirical reality where we can do transactions with each other. Okay? That Vyavaharika Satyam, that empirical shared reality called Vyavahara, Vyavaharika is a Tadita. Okay. To get my brain working for these Sanskrit terms. Okay. It's a different type of a word that means the satyam, that particular reality, you know, enjoys an empirical. It's an empirical reality. It's called vyavaharika. Empirical shared. That is Ishwara Srishti. This empirical shared reality is Ishwara Srishti. It's not your projection. It's not created by you. It doesn't just kind of exist for you. You know, it's something that you share with others. That's Ishwara's creation is vyavaharika satyam. Everybody understand? Vyavaharika means that empirical shared in satyam. That's the type of reality of satyam that it is. Then there's pratibhasika. Pratibhasika means subjective. Pratibhasika satyam. Subjective reality means your projections, you know. Your projections, your imaginations, your fantasies. What's going on inside of you that nobody else knows unless you tell them about it, you know. So that's pratibhasika, that is jiva srishti. Ishwara srishti, vyavaharika satyam, jiva srishti, pratibhasika satyam. Both are mitya. It's like a mitya within a mitya.
Then it sounds synonymous.
Mitya is the same. They're not synonymous because your imaginal reality, pratibhasika, is not a shared reality. Right, like say if you're thinking something or you're daydreaming, no one else here is participating in your daydream, and so that is something that is an individual sub. It's called subjective. Mm-hmm. Say you project a snake on a rope. Probably you're the only one in the room who's doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's subjective. Everybody else has seen a rope, but for some reason you have projected a snake on it.
I mean the pratibhasika and the jiva srishti.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Oh, I see. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. The jiva srishti is pratibhasika satyam. That's what the jiva srishti actually is. It's your own projection. It's not a shared reality. Ishwara srishti is vyavaharika satyam. Yeah. But of course, jiva srishti and pratibhasika satyam exist within vyavaharika satyam.
Say that again.
The pratibhasika, just like the jiva, is part of Ishwara. Okay? Mm. So this body is a shared reality. You see it, I see it. You know, we can transact with each other. Our sense organs are shared. I can see your sense organs. We use them to communicate. You know? So the sense organs and body are a shared reality. We all have minds. We don't see each other's mind, but we know that we have minds. We all have a buddhi. We have a mind. We have memory because we experience each other being able to think and being able to use logic, you know, and then being able to imagine. We see that we have these capacities. Like if we say, well, let's all have an imagination of, you know, a beautiful meadow. Is that the word nobody knew?
Yeah.
That years ago? Now you all know, right? Meadows are beautiful fields. Oh, my God. For those of you who don't know the story, I've gone through the whole camp using this example of a meadow. Just imagine a meadow. You know, everybody, you and your friends are walking through the meadow, and then I'm getting these questions, and at the end, like the last day, somebody says, "What is a meadow?" Yeah. Oh, the whole thing was missed. Don't let that happen. If you don't know the meaning of some word I'm using, raise your hand. So funny. So anyway, but we all can infer certain, the structure, you know, the structure of these upadis. Like we know we all have a mind, we all have a buddhi, we all have memory, we all have an ahankara, because we experience that with each other. But now, if you have a fantasy or unconscious material coming up, or your dreams, or your daydreams, you know, these things are individual experiences, your projections, like projecting a snake on a rope, you know, those are individual fantasies. They can't, they're not meant to be shared. They're not of that nature. They don't have the nature to be shared. You can describe them, but then you're bringing the description is now transactional in empirical reality. But you're describing something that only you experience, not the other person. So that's what makes it Jiva Srishti. It's your own creation. You know, it's not a shared creation. Mm-hmm. See what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So, and it's also Pratibhasika.
Yeah. So if we say that the mithya, there's Vyavaharika, you know. Mm-hmm. We call it Vyavaharika Satyam is mithya. Satyam means this experience that you have, this thing that is not tucham. Until I say Paramartika Satyam, I'm talking about that which exists and that which does not exist. Mm-hmm. So among these things that exist within Maya, we can divide it into Vyavahara, Vyavaharika Satyam, this reality, that shared reality that we experience, which is Mithya, upon analysis, and Pratibhasika Satyam, subjective experience, which we all have that ability to have that, but it is subjective, right? And it is also mithya. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maybe I have to listen again. So it sounds like they're actually synonymous, but maybe have slightly different touch.
I hope this is on.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mine's kind of falling through. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
The Pratibhasika and the Jiva Srishti.
What about it?
They're kind of synonymous, but maybe slightly.
Well, they're talking about the same thing, but maybe we're pointing out something something differently. We're putting more emphasis on Ishvara and then the Jiva. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're talking about Vyavaharika Satyam and Pratibhasika Satyam, both being mithya, you're talking ontologically. What is the order of reality of these different things?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Anybody else? Anything?
Uparama. It's like a commitment to a certain lifestyle. Checking.
Okay.
It says observing one's own duties, but whatever those are, and it seems like it must have more than that. It's more like a committed lifestyle to gain kaushalam and.
I see what you're saying, yeah. Mm. Actually, the definition in Tattva Bodha is not the most common definition, but we'll just say that definition. It's somebody who's just really satisfied doing your lifestyle is, or your commitment is just to do your own Swadharma. In other words, what in this life, what are my duties? What are the things to be done? And those that I do, and I do them as best that I can. And so there's that commitment to Dharma. So that's how they're really dealing with it. But the two that Swamiji has always used, in fact, he even mentioned in his book when he saw this definition that this is not the usual, he said this is not the usual definition, and then he went on and talked about it in that way. But the, okay. the way that the first way that it's often used is just as sannyasa. But to understand what's behind that, it's not just the committed lifestyle of sannyasa. It's that if you use it, it helps to understand if you use it, it's just as a layperson's term, then it's your ability to stick with the subject to the point of mastery, as opposed to being a gadfly. Gadfly means that I'm very, you know, a dilettante. A gadfly is a dilettante. A dilettante means I study something I'm interested in, and I study it for a while, and then I let that go. There's not even near any type of mastery. There's not that kind of commitment. There's just, I'm interested in this, and then this is interesting. Just moving around like that. But that mastery, to be able, means that you can actually stay with something for a long period of time. And sannyasa, for a mumukshu, sannyasa is kind of an ultimate commitment where you're giving up everything, just this is what you're going to do, this is what your whole life is about. So that's the kind of the farthest you can go with upadama. You know, but that sannyasa, you have to think about it for the West, for people like many of us. There is a sannyasa vritti there, but it's what we call guna sannyasa, which is also acknowledged in the shastra. That means that your vritti, what you are doing in this life is Vedanta, is gaining this knowledge. That's what you're doing. Everything else that you do, you can have many different jobs, and you're doing this and this, you make living and all of that, and you have children and everything. But everything is contained within that knowledge and within that viewing this life as a sadhana, that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, that Prasada Buddhi, for the sake of liberation, maturity in your knowledge. And so how do you deal with what life brings? You know, do you deal with it as a samsari, or do you deal with it as a mumukshu? And so for the upadama, for a mumukshu, is that, you know, there's a commitment there to maturing and to gaining my knowledge, gaining nishta, that upaya nishta, getting my clarity in this knowledge. I don't stop until it's there. You know, and then gaining the antakarana shuddhi, the upayanishta. That means that in all of my situations, it's really that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, that where everything is really Bhagavan. It's in the way that I treat the creation, is the way that I treat Ishvara. And to the degree it's not like that, then it's a sadhana. And that's a commitment, not for 1 or 2 days or 1 or 2 years. It's a commitment for your life. Because once you're a mumukshu, you can't really turn back. You can't say, okay, I've had enough of that. Let's try something else. You can't be a mumukshu without having realized certain facts about life. And once you realize them, you can't unrealize them. You know, how are you going to turn away from it? You can try for a while, it doesn't work. Yeah, I get Bhagavan just clicking. What are you doing? Yeah. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got about almost 20 minutes. Be nice to sing a few bhajans, maybe. Anybody else have any questions? Anybody? Back there? Okay. Can we do bhajans then? Let's do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll do one more. Then that'll be it for tonight.
Krishna, 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 Hare.
Acharya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishah Gobrahmanebhya Shubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yam Kshobharahitah Brahmana Santu Nirbhaya Om Sarvesham Swastir Bhavatu Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah Sarve Santu Niramayah Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om
How did you want to say?